Okay, sure.
I'd like to call this meeting of House State Affairs Committee to order. The time is 3:23 on Thursday, March 19, 2026, and we're here in room 120. Please remember to silence cell phones today. Members present are Representative St. Clair, Representative McCabe, Representative Vance, Representative Holland, Representative Himshute, Vice Chair Story, and myself, Chair Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Our record secretary is Andy Magnuson, and our moderator from the Juno LIO is Renzo Moises. Our committee aide for today's hearing is my staff, Stuart Relay. Thank you all so much for helping. We technically have three items on today's agenda, and we will get as far as we can on today's agenda. Whatever we don't get to, we'll roll to our calendar for Tuesday. We'll start with the House Bill 152, Education Head Tax from Representative Galvin amendment process. As time allows, we will then take up House Bill 295 on PFD eligibility for pilots from Representative McCabe and HB 189 on PFD convictions for amendments from Representative Mears. So we'll go ahead and get started today. The first item is House Bill 152 from Representative Galvin. This is our sixth hearing on the bill today, and since our hearing on February 26th, we have set and then updated the amendment deadline for several times. At our last hearing on Tuesday, we set a new amendment deadline for Wednesday, March 18th at 5 p.m., which was yesterday evening, and we received 10 amendments throughout that time. I'd like to welcome Representative Galvin and her staff, David Jang, to the table to provide any brief opening remarks before we begin this process. And then we will get into the amendments.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. House State Affairs is back on the record. Again, welcome Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. I appreciate the opportunity to have our sixth hearing on a broad-based revenue measure. And I understand that there are quite a few amendments, so I'm going to keep my remarks to answering your questions, hopefully. And again, I appreciate this discussion. Because I know the context of the day is that oil prices are so high, we certainly shouldn't need to worry about revenue. And I think most of you know, those of you who have been here for any period of time, appreciate that we still have an issue related to long-term fiscal decisions. And so we do need to think through our opportunities before us, and I appreciate you considering this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll just go ahead and jump right into the amendment process today. We will, again, as just a reminder for members, I believe they're not generally corresponding. So just as we go through amendments, please, when you move an amendment, offer it by its number and its A dot number, just for the record keeping. We'll go first to Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will not be offering A.1.
Okay. Amendment number one, also known as A.1, is not being offered. And that will bring us to amendment number two, Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, Chair Carrick. I move amendment number two.
I'll object for discussion, at least Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Amendment number two is a exploration of a question that has come up in the public debate around a possible income tax about whether or not there might be some sort of mechanism by which the permanent fund dividend would not be taxable for purposes of federal tax liability. It came up in the spring of, I believe, 24, authored in the Anchorage Daily News by Matt Berman, an economist at ICER, about this idea that maybe permanent funds dividends could be netted against an income tax for purposes of being able to create an offset there. And indeed, he proposed that perhaps we could find a way that the permanent fund dividend would not be taxable and further kind of offset the impact to Alaskans that find themselves paying a portion of their permanent fund to the federal government in taxes. So I've spent, with the help of staff and with a lot of input from legal, a lot of time trying to explore this idea. That idea also resurfaced in some more recent ICER work. It's shown up in some other community conversations about, is there a mechanism to do that? So we've been exploring the question of, is there a way to structure the permanent fund dividend and how we manage that in a way to reduce the federal tax liability and therefore some benefit to Alaskans on that. And the way that we've proposed in amendment number two is by essentially making little change to structurally what the dividend is and all of the rules about how it gets applied to different funds and who qualifies for it, but to change it so it's a tax credit. Because under federal law and tax law, a tax credit is not a taxable event. Now, as soon as you have control over money, then it becomes taxable. So if we were to take the permanent fund and you know, put it into some sort of magic electronic wallet and then let you use it to pay income taxes, DMV, fishing licenses, then you have control over how it's being spent, and all of a sudden it's taxable income. If you, however, put it in there specifically as a tax credit against income tax, that amount that gets applied against your income tax in this case would not be taxable. And for those folks that would see a significant portion of their PFD applied towards some tax liability, they would not have to be paying taxes on the benefit of that dividend. And then whatever amount is left over after applying any income taxes you owed in the case of this bill, which might be nothing for people that are under the tax cap, they would still receive all of the money. It would still be taxable. So any amount distributed out of that would be taxable. But for a lot of people, they would have the benefit of it not being taxable. I'll just wrap up and just say, you know, it's an interesting exercise, so that for folks that were interested in, is there a way to do it? Well, the answer is yes, carefully. Here's a way to do it. And, you know, the amendment goes through all of the details about changes, but again, it preserves all of the other things we use for the dividend, the way it goes into restitution accounts, the way it's held or not held. All it did is change the name so it qualified differently. I would also just note in wrap up that one of the other interesting things we learned in this process of exploring how do we do this is that if we somehow changed the definition of the PFD so it was some sort of wellness benefit going to people, there is also an IRS carve out for wellness. That being said, I'm sensitive to the idea that if we start calling our permanent fund dividend a tax credit, it's probably a non-starter. If we start calling it a wellness benefit, it's probably a non-starter. But I did want to bring before you a way that if we were going to have an income tax, that we could potentially pay for it with a permanent fund dividend. And to ensure that you didn't end up paying for your taxes with a permanent fund dividend, but still have to write a check to the federal government for the taxes on that money, this would block the or avoid the federal tax liability on the portion applied to income tax.
Thank you, Representative Holland. And I'm going to first, on each of our amendments today, go to the bill sponsor and then to other committee discussion. So I'll turn to Representative Galvin and her staff if they have comments on Amendment 2.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. I will first of all say thank you to the maker of this amendment and thank you to Ledge Legal. A lot of careful research has been done. And it may seem like this is straying off of our original intent of the bill, but I have no objection to it. I think, in fact, that it's important for us to note that we would all benefit. Every single Alaskan who gets a PFD would benefit a substantial amount of dollars. You know, and it could be a couple hundred bucks, whatever it is that they are normally having to pay for receiving a PFD. So that is their taxation federally would get removed for every single Alaskan. So I appreciate that. I think that we all would like to pay fewer taxes. And in this case, if you change the name of it, it looks like that would get us there. I know that our U.S. Congressman is also working on something not exactly like this, but related to this. And I appreciate that too. We all are looking for ways to make sure that Alaskans aren't losing money and still we're able to catch up with our fiscal responsibilities. So I'll just say that I appreciate the efforts here. And if that's the will of the committee, I understand where we're going. I think this would need a little bit of research with regard to the administrative piece. I'm concerned about what that might add to our implementation. And so we would want to probably get a fiscal note or hear from DOR about this, but very creative. And I thank you for it. And I want to also mention that my staff may have another comment on this. Nope. Okay. So thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to weigh in.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. I think I had Representative St. Clair in the queue.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the maker of the amendment. Are we talking a state income tax? Or are we talking federal tax that this could be used? Sorry, to supplement that.
Representative Holland. Yeah,
thank you. Through the chair, this would be specifically a credit for state income tax, or for that matter, any state tax. We're in the context of income tax here today, but if there was some other tax we created at some point in the future, it could be applied to the state tax. I would also just like to clarify that the amount that is shielded from federal tax is only the amount that is applied to the state tax amount. So most Alaskans, probably assuming they're under the threshold of paying the income tax, wouldn't have any federal tax shield because they'll still be taxed on the amount that's actually distributed to them that they can spend.
Can I do a follow-up just like a general conversation? Approximately 27% of Alaskans meet this threshold. This would not help every Alaskan. This would only help 23%, which are those that are carrying everybody else on their backs. With that being said, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative St. Clair, I have Vice Chair Story next.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think this is either to the bill sponsor or to Rep. Holland. I remember when we received permanent fund dividend check and an energy relief payment to Citizens. And the energy relief payment was not where we did not have to deduct federal taxes from that. And my constituents were very happy about that, where we have to deduct federal payments for receiving our PFD. So my question is, does that mean that when you were talking about a wellness benefit, the energy relief benefit, we did not have to pay taxes by that? And so this amendment would have that follow into that same category of when we were receiving an energy relief benefit.
Representative Holland.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you for that. So as the amendment is presented to you today, it is presented to you as a tax credit that would be applicable to any amount of state tax you need to pay. I did mention the wellness as an alternative that we didn't offer today. That would take a slightly different amendment to recharacterize the PFD as some sort of a benefit or needs-based payment. And that was the case of the energy check that we got. That was characterized as a needs-based payment that applied to everybody. And we could do that as an alternative. But the amendment you have at the moment is not a needs-based payment as IRS would recognize it. It's using the tax credit approach. It was essentially a coin toss. We wanted to bring to you this research and this work that had been done by Ledge Legal and by my staff, just to let you know that we've looked deeply into this issue, and we presented for you today the tax credit approach, but recognizing that that carries some challenges, as would have if we came and brought you a wellness needs base, but I don't know that all Alaskans want to be classified that way. So your point about the energy check, though, is a good reminder of how that worked, and we could still explore that down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just reading through this robust amendment, and it looks like it's completely changing the way we would look at the dividend. So by the looks of it, every time the word dividend is mentioned, it now is no longer an actual corporate dividend. It would be a tax credit. And that's a very different approach than what I thought you were going when you first started speaking. You did clarify, but I think this is I don't see the majority of Alaskans supporting this because, as Representative St. Clair mentioned, this would only benefit the 27% who's paying the tax. And I think Alaskans would find that troubling. When tax credits are mentioned, the first thing they think of are oil tax credits, and they have a strong aversion to that. If you had made a separate section, maybe to keep the dividend intact as it is and create in the income tax bill a provision for the PFD to be untaxable on the state level, I think that would have been a more positive approach. But this one, to me, patently changes our corporate dividend. And I am one who opposes it being needs-based, because this is the benefit that every Alaskan gets. This is, to me, the most equal, the most equitable line item in our budget that we can do, because it impacts every single eligible Alaskan. Not other things that we do will touch every Alaskan, but this does. And I want to keep the integrity of that. But again, I think I would have taken it, I may have been favorable if you had just made it an untaxable in the income tax bill. But this one patently changes the dividend altogether, and so I'll not be able to support it. Thank you.
Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. I just want to emphatically agree with you. and just note that we looked at the idea of perhaps having that split you're talking about. But as soon as you create the split, then the person making the decision over the split has dominion over the money. So they made the decision. So it no longer gets that tax credit option on there. The tax credit kind of had to be an all-in kind of thing. But your comments, your concerns, your framing of this, I'm 100% on board with that. But I appreciate the thoughts. And this was, like I said, bringing forward something that we could work on. And maybe out of this will come some new variants that we haven't considered so far. But we did consider how to split that. And that creates, anytime somebody has control over money and how it's handled, then it creates that problem in there. But thank you for the feedback.
To dialogue, Madam Chair, just for understanding.
Yes, but I'm just going to say this is a hefty amendment, so in this case, I think it's warranted. But we have a lot to get through today, so we may have to cut dialogue later, just as a heads up. But
I will keep it short, but just to understand the conversation that you had in getting to here was did you have to go this way? Just so I understand. It sounds like you were discouraged from the approach of just saying, hey, the dividend could be a considered non-taxable because it would already be assumed to be taxable once it was distributed. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Well, thank
See,
you
that
for
was
your,
easy, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comments. So I said, I want to be clear. I agree with your concern. When I introduced the amendment, I had reservations about this.
And I'll just add my 2 cents here. I tried to do something similar with the amendment. I ran into the same problem that Rep. Holland is resolving with this amendment. However, I chose not to pursue. I really appreciate the work into this, but I didn't choose to pursue it this way because of the perception issue that would be created, because of the title change to the bill, because of the level of complication, just administratively, that this might add to the implementation of the underlying bill. And this is potentially something I would support as its own bill in the future, especially if there's any way it could be structured such that we're not calling the dividend a tax credit, which I don't support. And I recognize the amendment sponsor does not love that terminology either. But at this time, I wanted to keep an open mind and hear the discussion. I don't think I'll be able to support the amendment, though. Mm-hmm. Representative McCabe?
Thanks, Chair Carrick. So I'm just curious, probably for the maker of the amendment, I'm curious if the federal government is going to make the dividend non-taxable, if a good chunk of this depends on your federal income, why can't you just pay your state tax with your dividend? Why not just do a simple thing that says, hey, this non-taxable dividend, it's non-taxable federally, you can designate it to go to whatever your state tax would be, just through a checkbox on the form, instead of this whole, to me, this seems to just change the character of the dividend and rename it. And sorry, but there's no possible way I would get killed. So, renaming it puts it in a whole different category of public perception.
Representative Holland.
Yeah, I'll just briefly answer, and perhaps the bill sponsor will have more to say. But this was an attempt to explore how to use the dividend money, whatever we call it, as a way to pay the state tax and avoid federal tax liability. But I think there's more to how the bill is actually structured that maybe the bill sponsor wants to fill in the rest of the story.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative McCabe, and my staffer may be able to find the section for this, but there is a place where you can, and it was, I remembered it was a significant dollar to implement this, and it was, I think, probably when you were back in Ways and Means that we talked about this, because I may have gotten the idea from you, but there is a place in here where you can check off in your PFD application that you are paying for your taxes. So I believe that's in here, but I my staff would have to look for that section because I don't remember where it is in the bill. But yes, and I appreciate that observation and idea.
And it's in section 3.
Yep.
You see that? Okay.
Just for awareness. I think we've fairly well exhausted the conversation around this amendment. I'm going to turn to Representative Holland if you have wrap-up comments.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carrick, and to the committee for the opportunity to at least explore this idea. It's one that's been bubbling around the community for a couple of years, and I thought this was a place to dig into it a little bit further to see where it might go. I appreciate the feedback, but I'll join you in not supporting it because of the concerns. But on the other hand, we did some work as valuable, and I hope folks that are learning about this that might access the documents that are available, perhaps we'll find some ways to use some of this information in the future that's beneficial. Thank you.
And I'll just ask Representative Holland, would you, the objection would be maintained. Do you want us to go to a vote on this, or would you like to withdraw the amendment?
I'll withdraw the amendment.
Okay. It's up to you. The amendment is being withdrawn.
Yeah, unless there's any objection to undoing the objection. I think we've discussed it, and I think we all know kind of where we're at. So
okay.
I think it's fine. Thank you for the time to explore this.
Okay.
I don't know, it might be kind of fun to watch you vote against your own amendment.
Kind of like what?
Tactical like, retreat is much better than a loss.
Like watching me bid against myself in an auction. Yeah. So it's all good.
Sometimes there's strategy in that. So I wanted to give you the range of options, but it sounds like Representative Holland, Amendment Number 2 has been withdrawn, and that will bring us to Amendment Number 3, Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll not be offering Amendment Number 3, A.5, because there's a future amendment that will do basically the same thing.
Thank you, Representative St. Clair. So due to some duplication later, it sounds like Amendment Number 3, also known as A.5, will not be offered. And that brings us to Amendment Number 4, Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Amendment Number 4, A.6.
Object. Representative St. Clair.
The rationale behind this amendment, ma'am, is deleting the S-Corp clause that's in this legislation. There are over 11,000 S-Corps in the state of Alaska. Mainly, this is targeting one, Hillcorp. I was trying to get information on how many barrels and how much money they brought to the state, but I guess that's secret squirrel stuff that they don't really want to share with us. But they have brought significant revenue into the state and also jobs and to support Alaskans and others that I don't – we knew what they were when they came in to Alaska. They pulled a lot of money, invested a lot of money and pulled a lot of oil out of ground that some of the big three oil companies thought was emptied or wasn't worth doing. So I don't believe we knew what they were when they came in. It appears to me this is a specific tax to Hillcorp, and I don't like seeing stuff like that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative St. Clair. I have a question right out the gate. I was struggling a little bit to kind of figure out exactly what this amendment functionally does. And so is this, I know it removes the, I guess, S-Corp loophole.
Correct.
Provision.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is there something else that's also accomplished in this amendment that I'm
missing? Not supposed to be.
Okay.
It was not my intention that it was to basically everyone calls it the S-Corp loophole. It was to close it. I don't believe that this is the appropriate way of doing it. And yes, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Representative St. Clair. And again, before we go to committee discussion, I will go to the bill sponsor. Sorry, I jumped in the queue there. Representative Galvin.
Well, thank you, Chair Carrick. And also thank you, Representative St. Clair, for bringing up this amendment. I appreciate your thoughts. I hesitate to support this. I do not see how it makes public policy sense in that we have an income tax on corporations. That's very clear. And if they choose to form an S-Corp or an LLC, they avoid the corporate tax and they take income as personal income, right? This is anyone can do that. And if we are putting a personal income tax in place, then why would we exempt an S-Corp shareholder? We would create a single group that would be exempt of all taxes. That's not clear to me. And that's either corporate or personal. So, what about the LLC members? Should all LLCs convert to an S-Corp to avoid all taxes? Should all individuals form an S-Corp and have their employers hire their S-Corp to avoid all taxes? This is sort of where we are. And so it doesn't fill the public policy purpose in my mind. And to answer the question, maybe the supposition that the only thing I was trying to do with that section was try to have impact on one S-Corp. The answer is that's not true. It would impact all S-Corps or individuals who are part of that, who are making above whatever threshold this body decides the tax threshold is, or the proper terminology for that would be the level of taxation wherein that would start. And currently this bill starts at $150,000, the dollars above that or the dollars above $300 per household is where the exclusions currently rest. And I understand there's more amendments further down the road, so, but that's my comment on this amendment. I would not support it for the purposes I've stated.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. I have a couple people in the queue. We'll go to Representative Holland. And then just for the sake of time, I think what I'll do is I'll let members speak to the amendment and then go back to the amendment sponsor, unless there's a question directly to the amendment sponsor in the process. So Representative Holland and then McCabe.
Great. Thank you. And perhaps I'm not understanding the amendment clearly. So with that caveat, it's my understanding that this section that we're dealing with here, credit for taxes imposed under other jurisdictions, and this amendment is, you know, beginning with E in there, this is avoiding double taxation on the part of people that have paid a tax as an S-Corp, and then we're asking them to pay an income tax on top of that. And I think you want this to stay in unless you want folks to get taxed twice. Because this is creating something that says that to the degree that somebody has paid a tax as a shareholder in S-Corp, they don't have to pay it again. So perhaps I'm wrong about that interpretation, but I viewed this, the S-Corp language in here, as anticipating that there could be taxes on S-Corp someday, and we were trying to protect the individuals from double taxation.
Thank you, Representative Holland. Representative McCabe?
I have always been, Madam Chair, so I've always been a little concerned about this section as well. I've been concerned with the S-Corp language for that reason. What if a guy lives, S-Corp owner lives out of state and he lives in a state where he's taxed? How are we going to deal with that? So, they don't. Texas doesn't have a tax, but say the owner of Hillcorp who lives in Texas had to pay taxes in Texas. How do we, and, you know, I think there's language in there. This bill's pretty complicated to parse that out on, frankly. But I might also point out that there are a great number of healthcare facilities which would certainly pass that cost on to us. In the state of Alaska, some of those 11,300, I think, S-Corp, our healthcare, dentist, doctor's office, medical facilities. So I'm a little concerned with that. I don't know. I'm quite certain I support this amendment, but I don't know how to take that whole section. I guess I understand it's not particularly pointed at Hillcorp. I get that, and that's because it's not worded like some of the other ones that you and I have seen that are pointed at Hillcorp. So I appreciate that, but I don't know. It's interesting.
I'm looking around for other discussion. I think we can go. Oh, Vice Chair Story.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. My question is, I think Rep. Holland's interpretation and Rep. Galvin's interpretation being different concerns me, and I would like to know, I don't know who can clarify that, if it's legal, if they're on the line, but that makes a big difference to me on what those two different opinions were. We should know what it means, should have clarity.
Let's go ahead and direct that question to Emily Naumann, who's online, if that's okay with the amendment sponsor. Okay. Yeah. So, Ms. Naumann, I don't know if you've heard the discussion thus far. If not, we could have Vice Chair Story restate that question.
For the record, this is Emily Naumann, Legislative Legal Services, and I understand the committee is discussing the effect of Amendment A.6, which removes S corporations from the income tax proposed under the bill. Do I have that understanding correct?
That is correct. And I think we're all wondering just a little bit more about the impact of this amendment. And if we need to restate the discussion, just let us know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And to the chair, you know, my understanding is that the intent of this amendment is to remove S-corps from the taxation. S-corps are pass-through entities. So in general, an individual reports that income on their individual income tax. Once you remove the references to S-corp, it's difficult to be sure how the Department of Revenue would interpret that, whether or not that would they would still flow that income through to a person's individual tax liability. Based on how this amendment is structured, though, it appears to me that the intent is to completely remove that income from S corporations from an individual's income for the purposes of the income tax proposed in the bill. So in other words, as a person's wages or their investment income or their dividend income, that would be income. But if that person also had S corporation income or income they earned as part of being an owner or shareholder of an S corporation, that portion of the income would not be taxed.
And Ms. Nauman, can you just clarify a question for me? It's my understanding that S-corps themselves don't pay the tax, that it passes through to the individual owners. Is that correct?
To the chair, yes, that's correct.
Okay, I just wanted to add that. Okay, we have a few more points of discussion for you, Ms. Nauman. Let's go to Representative Holland, then McCabe, and then I'd like to go back to the amendment sponsor, if that's all right. Great. Representative Holland.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. Now, just to clarify, it's the federal tax codes that flow S-Corp partnership LLC income into individuals' income for purposes of federal tax liability through K-1s. And I'm assuming since this bill is focused in on taking the federal tax liability and assigning that a percentage in order to calculate the taxes, it's not clear to me that we have the ability here to take that out of the federal tax liability in order to accomplish this. And as I was reading it, it sounded like maybe this avoided some double taxation within the state, but not the ability to shield somebody's S-corp income from federal tax liability, which is what's used to calculate the income tax. Am I roughly right in that it's federal tax codes that's flowing K-1s onto the income that is then used to calculate the income tax?
Was that directed to Representative Galvin or to Ms. Nauman?
Ms. Nauman.
Okay, sorry, Ms. Nauman.
And for the record, Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Holland. Your understanding of the federal tax system is correct. Of course, the state is welcome to tax or allocate that income for purposes of the state income tax, however it chooses. I think it's important to note that there are other pass-through entities like partnerships in the income tax bill that are not dealt with in this amendment. So there is indications that the bill is intended to pass that income from those types of business structures through, but by removing the references to S corporations and listening to the intent of the sponsor, I think that the amendment would result in that S corporation specifically income not being subject to state tax.
Clear as mud. Representative McCabe.
Yeah, I'm kind of struggling with that, Ms. Nauman. Thank you, Chair Carrick. So an S Corp has less than 100 shareholders. An LLC could be a single proprietorship, possibly, but an LLC could be an S Corp, you know. I get that, or they could elect to do an LLC. So my question is how would an S-Corp, just because you were a shareholder of an S-Corp, if the S-Corp isn't taxable, but yet you get money from the S-Corp, how do you get it where you don't claim it as income? You claim it as a share or a dividend or something, or an owner's dividend. Wouldn't you still have to declare that on your federal return? I guess I'm not an IRS guy. I use TurboTax, so.
Ms. Nauman.
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, and this is still Emily, Legislative Legal Services. You are correct under the federal tax law that the federal tax law states that a person, if they have allocable income from an S corporation, that gets flows through to their individual income taxes, and they pay taxes on it as an individual. State income taxes, though, can be restructured however the state decides. So, for instance, the state could decide, we don't want to tax. A good example in this bill is the permanent fund dividend, right? The state says you might have to pay taxes on that at the federal level, but for state income tax purposes, we as the state get to craft what sorts and types of income we want to tax for purposes of the income, the individual income tax. This amendment, as I understand it, is attempting to say, although you pay tax on that income at the federal level, we don't want individuals to pay income tax on that at the state level.
And Ms. Nauman, can you have familiarity with this legislation, obviously. Can you just clarify for me, too, that the bill before us doesn't tax federal, it doesn't put the tax on the tax liability, it's on the adjusted gross income. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I'm not seeing additional... I'm not seeing additional discussion at this time. I'd like to go back to Representative St. Clair, whose amendment this is, and then for wrap-up comments, and then following that, we will likely take a vote on this amendment.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. The way I understand it is S-Corps don't pay a corporate tax because they're not a corporation. They're a single individual. Then going on to what Ms. Nauman said, that when it goes to the shareholder, it can be taxed. What if the shareholder lives in a state that already is taxing it as an income tax? Then it would, in my opinion, be duplicative. Representative Galvin, sorry. That's your thing.
Nice try.
If you'd like, we can call in Representative Galvin.
No.
Representative Galvin.
Well, or we could, thank you, Chair Carrick. We could also hear from Ledge Legal on this, but you absolutely cannot double tax, period. Cannot be done, whether you're an S-Corp or an individual. And mind you, in this case, what we're talking about is your federal form. If you are an S-Corp, it rolls into, as we heard from Representative Holland, as individual income. And you cannot, if you're paying 5% in Idaho, you can't get double taxed. It's, so if your income is made here in Alaska, then you would get taxed the 4% here if that's what this, if this bill passes as such. And then that would get reduced from your state taxes in Idaho, and you would only get taxed then the 1% on top of that, for example. And I'm, you know, just trying to give you like what that would look like to the real person who's paying taxes. But absolutely illegal to double tax. So I just want to make that clear that this and our Ledge Legal has kind of helped piece through this whole bill to make sure we were following the national tax laws to ensure that we were not doing that.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. I'm going to go back to Representative St. Clair. And just, again, in the interest of time, I do think we've had maybe confusing but fairly exhaustive discussion on this subject, and I appreciate the amendment sponsor, but we will do closing comments at this time.
Yes, ma'am. In closing comments, I'll withdraw this amendment.
Okay.
Sorry,
thank you,
I
waste Representative
time.
St. Clair. No, you're good. It's important to have the discussion at this time. Amendment number 4, also known as A.6, has been withdrawn. This brings us to Amendment Number 5, also known as A.7. Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will not be offering A.7.
Okay. Amendment Number 5, also known as A.7, will not be offered. This brings us to Amendment Number 6, also known as A.8, from Representative Holland.
Thank you. I move Amendment Number 6.
Object for discussion, Representative Holland.
Great, thank you. So one of the issues that I was exploring with the broad community discussion about new taxes is how we adjust and begin recognizing that in this day and age, many people are struggling to pay any of the bills that they have day to day, much less if we start asking them to pay new taxes. Now, admittedly, you know, this tax comes in at a pretty high threshold. But nonetheless, I wanted to explore the idea of how to phase it in. What was intended was to phase us in such that in 2026, the maximum would just be the head tax, since it's impractical to promulgate all the rules to get a income tax going this year. And then the intent was that in 27, the maximum amount would be capped at the permanent fund dividend amount. So people could kind of plan for the next year in terms of what was going on and doing that. The 8.8 version you have of Amendment 6 here isn't quite what I was headed for, but I did want to at least share with you this idea of how do we think about how do we implement any sort of taxes in a way that recognizes the challenge that people are having paying bills and making ends meet and trying to find a way to do that. This amendment, where we're at right now, doesn't quite get me to where I wanted to go, but I do want to just have introduced that idea that we might look at those steps in the future of how we address this. So for the moment, I am going to line up with the prior amendments and withdraw this one.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Holland, for putting a lot of thought into these amendments, to the whole committee for putting a lot of thought into these amendments that have been offered. I do think even as we do withdraw some of these amendments, the discussion is very worthwhile, and I appreciate where you were headed with this last amendment there. Okay, a little sooner than I'd expected, but here we go. We have reached amendment number 7, also known as A.9. I will move my amendment and also object for a discussion. And amendment number 7, also known as A.9, is a two-part amendment. It's essentially a cleanup amendment. It removes a duplicative deduction that would essentially create a double deduction, effectively increasing the tax threshold from $150,000 to $163,000 per person, and then $300,000 to $326,000 per joint filing. So it would have a net positive impact on the revenue captured by this bill, or a net negative impact on the revenue generated by this bill. But the thresholds move relatively slightly overall. The amendment also just cleans up the effective dates, moving them from 2026 January 1st to 2027 January 1st. And I will turn to the bill sponsor, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. And again, I appreciate the thoughtfulness of this amendment and of all of the amendments. This makes sense. To me, it's sort of an update from where we were when this was first put into place. It sounds reasonable, and it simplifies things, I think, without doing any damage. I appreciate it.
Okay. I'm looking to see if there's any discussion. Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, Amendment number 7, also known as A.9, is adopted. And that brings us to Amendment number 8, also known as A.10, Representative Vance.
I move Amendment number 8.
And I'll object, Representative Vance.
Okay, this amendment raises the threshold so that we can capture the high earners. But the more important provision is on page 22, line 7, that adds technical and vocational education. So it directly expands targeted short-term career and technical training that prepares Alaskans for in-demand jobs in the state resources industry, primarily oil and gas, mining, and related construction maintenance work. So it would fund the TVEP-aligned training programs. It was created in 2000 and made permanent in 2024. And it distributes money to a network of providers. These include the University of Alaska, which is around 30%, the Alaska Vocational Technical Center, AVTEC, regional centers, and the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. So in looking at the Trends magazine and where most of the out-of-state workers are, is in these in the trades. And we want Alaskans to be prepared to take these jobs. But we need to train them and make sure that we are creating this pipeline of career paths in-house to be able to take these jobs, especially with these larger projects coming on. And so this would direct funds not just for K through 12, but also to focus on technical training. So this is a targeted approach to make sure that we are leading to more graduates that are going to be going into these fields and hopefully serving more Alaskans. In recent years, TVEP has trained 6,000 to 8,000 people annually, and more funding equals more seats, especially in the rural areas. So I'm trying to stay in line with the maker, with the bill sponsor on just kind of what she's trying to do to make sure that our money is going towards our future in education. And I just wanted to be more specific. So in Alaskan workers in construction, for instance, the number of non-residents was 6,395. Manufacturing, 16,679. So total of out-of-state workers in just those two areas, 23,074. So 44% were non-residents. And if we could really be strategic about how we are educating our kids and our workforce, then we can make sure that we're not only preparing them for the future, but that they're going to stay here in the state, that we will incentivize them to stay because they'll have jobs that they are prepared for rather than having to go out of state to then hopefully come back and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Vance. And as with the others, we'll go to we'll go to Representative Galvin first.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. I again appreciate the thoughtfulness of this amendment. I absolutely am concerned about Alaskans not getting the high-paying jobs, and I appreciate that we have AVTEC, we have the Pipeline Center out of Fairbanks, we have AWIB, we have many different organizations working to make sure that once folks are out of our K-12 system, they are quickly entering opportunities for internships or apprenticeships or even straight into the trades right away. And I think we are, as a state, addressing this somewhat with our STEP fund, our STEP money going into Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I have appreciation for this. I'm not sure if we're getting too specific, but again, it's the will of the committee. To me, the bigger concern that I have is around the amount of revenue that this will, the change of revenue that this amendment makes. And I say that because it's, you know, we're getting to the point where we may be reducing revenue to a level where it raises the question, is it worth the cost of implementing a new tax? I want to be careful about that. It becomes a bit of a tax with training wheels that's going to look like, you know, what are you going to do next? You're just setting up a tax collection infrastructure so that tax can be increased in the future. And I don't really want to have that sense. I want us to have a fair tax that's not going to ramp up. That's not where we're at. And so that's my concern a bit, is whether or not when we change these numbers too much. It's a hard fine line to get to the right number. I appreciate that, but I'm going to now turn it to my staff, if that's okay, to give you a sense of the numbers based on what we've parsed out with this amendment.
Sure. Mr. Jang?
Through the chair, to represent Advance, this is David Jang, legislative staff to Rep. Elise Galvin. We did take a look at raising the standard deduction from $150,000 to $250,000 using the model that we mentioned on the record last time, last hearing. And raising this standard deduction by $100,000 would decrease the revenue by roughly $120 million. The model, keeping the deductions at the same level, this model anticipates $358 million, and I just also remind committee members that this 4% flat tax is the bulk of where this revenue for the bill originates. So starting from 358, if we raise that standard deduction to 100,000, the anticipated revenue would be $235 million. And this is I just also would note on the model, this is from old data from 2023 with the numbers of Alaskans in each income bracket. I would just leave my comments there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jang. We'll go to Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you to the chair and to the maker of the amendment. I really value the focus that the amendment has on career and technical education that you've brought into this focus. The change to the income levels, though, I don't support. If anything, I'd be arm wrestling whether or not they're already too high. So I would support, though, if there was a conceptual amendment later to grab just the career and technical education language that you've got here and put that in. I think that's a valuable addition, and I appreciate the way you articulated how important it is. But the amendment with this other change, I won't support.
Okay, thank you, Representative Holland. I guess I'll add myself to the queue here. I am really struggling because I really like this amendment, in part, and I don't like the increase in the threshold. I think there's just a lot of policy considerations and revenue considerations here. So I don't really support raising the threshold. And I, having carried the last two reauthorizations of the technical vocational education program, have some strong feelings about that program. One of the challenges with, and I know that the amendment is nonspecific and also specific. It says technical and vocation education programs to include the Alaska TVET program, which is great. I actually really like that language because it offers flexibility. I would be a little bit concerned about administrating that and how we would divide that, because TVET allocations were politically determined. Now they're permanent, but there is will amongst the legislature to reopen that conversation. And can think of the member from Soldotna and I have talked extensively about reopening that discussion because we weren't very satisfied with where the TVET program was codified the way that it was. And if it did get opened back up to those political determinations, I don't love the idea of an income tax being directed into a program like that, just because of the way it's currently structured. But I do think it would be worth entertaining a conceptual amendment to the amendment I have next, which would add technical and vocational education programs under the education head tax portion potentially. So I'd really like to maybe have us consider that. But as it stands with the way this amendment is structured and with how much it includes, I don't think I can support it, mostly because of the Section 1 part. Let's see. I think I have Representative McCabe next. Oh, no, I don't have Representative McCabe next. Okay. Is there any further discussion here? Seeing none, I'll turn back to Representative Vance. Do you have any wrap-up comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate everyone's input on this. And just, in all fairness, I'm opposed to an income tax. And had a very robust discussion with my district about it, that I was elected on a very clear mandate to oppose an income tax. My predecessor was proposing this, almost this exact measure, and taking a very large chunk of the dividend, and my district said absolutely not. So I'm going to keep my word to that, but I did commit to them that I would work on this. And, part of the conversation around education is, I think, needs to be a full conversation, because education is more than K-12. It is vital. Can't get to the technical and voc ed if you don't have the K-12. But I feel like when we're talking about building our future and keeping Alaskans here, we need to have the fuller discussion. And so I would be open to dividing the question, because I'm having a hard time seeing how we could add this to your amendment number 9 that's a head tax, because if I was understanding the head tax, is that would kind of pay for the initial components of setting up the structure of the revenue division, the tax division that would need to be created. And I'm open to dialogue and what that should look like, because ultimately I think I'm going to lose the battle on the threshold, but where we are seeing agreement is adding tech and voc ed to this funding. And I think how it gets distributed is probably a future conversation for the legislature. And maybe that's an annual conversation. I don't know, but as long as we consider that this should not, this area of technical and vocational education not be neglected as a recipient of this income tax.
That those wrap-up comments generated some additional discussion. I think we should go ahead and entertain it. Your comment about dividing the question. So one of the challenges, or one of the differences between your amendment and my next amendment, is that I have an amendment which essentially removes the designation on the income tax revenue, so that income tax revenue goes to UGF. Mm-hmm. The education head tax still has a designation to it for K-12 currently for the public education fund. And so what I would be open to just conceptually is adding technical and vocational education programs to the language around the education head tax. But pursuant to a lot of the conversation in this committee and my own feelings about it, I actually want to remove the designation for public education fund in the income tax portion. And so the amendment you have before us here puts that, or clarifies that the designation also can go to technical and vocational education. So I think it would be up to you how you want to approach that, but just two different ways of approaching the same question. And I'll maybe let us both muddle on that for a second. And I had Representative Holland and then Vice Chair Story.
Thank you. I don't have any new comments. Oh,
never mind. Vice Chair Story.
Thank you to the committee. I've been listening to all of your comments thoughtfully, and I certainly know how critical it is that we place more of an emphasis on our career and technical education. And I just want to point out House Education is having a meeting on Wednesday, taking a bill from Rep. Elam, and working with a bunch of education entities and looking at where our career tech gaps are in the state, looking at what are the different career tech options we have from each of our career tech programs to see what we are offering and what we need for industry and for the different
industries in our state. So I definitely know there's work that needs to be done, and we need, you know, revenue to support that work. What I'm just struggling with is when I view this, when I think about the revenue and I think about our constitutional mandate to fund education, I like it, this being an education income producer mechanism, and I like to think if it goes towards education, I wouldn't want it all, $358 million, to go to career tech, and I don't know if that is what I am hearing by this amendment. So that's kind of one of my questions, because anyway, I need to have that clarified, because I was visualizing this to really help, like all states, we are always going to want to be, you know, funding our public education system. And I looked at this as a way to help with that and not just the career tech component. So I would be opposed to an amendment if that all so. Anyway, those are my thoughts, and I really appreciate the discussion, and I will continue to listen. Thank you.
And just to Vice Chair Story, just to clarify, I think at least what I was discussing with Representative Vance here is the idea of adding, my suggestion would be to add a conceptual amendment to clarify in the upcoming amendment that we, in the portion that is still designated under the education head tax, that we would simply add technical and vocational or education and vocational programs and still include the public education fund so that both would be included, not switch it. And that's just a suggestion. It will be up to this amendment sponsor what she would like to do.
Madam Chair, after I've read through both, I think we can... dividing the question would probably be a drafting nightmare. And
legal loves it when we do that.
And so I will just, you know, let this one go. And I will just choose to, I think I'll choose to withdraw the amendment. And that way we can get on to the next one.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Vance. So I see amendment number 8, also known as A.10, has been withdrawn. I did have Representative St. Clair in the queue as well. Did you want to add to that previous discussion before we move
Thank you, on? Madam Chair. Actually, it was for Ledge Legal, Emily Nauman, just for some clarification.
Sure.
That any funds raised within this legislation is not specifically dedicated to education, but can be used for other things also. Is that correct, ma'am?
Again, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative St. Clair. That's correct. Our Constitution prohibits the dedication of funds. So although we can designate funds and bills, we can set out and say the legislature may appropriate them for a specific purpose, there cannot be constitutionally a dedication of those funds.
Okay, thank you.
To any specific purpose.
Yeah, and Representative St. Clair, that's a good thing to kind of always put back on the record is we are talking about designations of funds today, which is our wish and our hope, and oftentimes actually ends up being the case, but it's not dedicated funds that we're discussing today. I'll go back to Representative St. Clair, and then I see Representative Galvin also has a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that. It's just a lot of times we market items as education or for specific things, designating it for them, and we can't do that. And it all comes down to intent. Our intent sitting around this table here is to, you know, get money to education. However, we saw with the HIFE last year that very little is untouchable. So that was just my comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative St. Clair. We'll go to Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Carrick. I can wait and make these comments at the amendment number 9, because they are all interrelated to what we call it or don't call it. I think it's important to hear some recent news from the other body as well.
That sounds good. Representative Vance?
I would just I appreciate this conversation for clarification, but however, on page 22, there is a section talking about the early education fund. So let's be transparent here that it says on the line, page 22, line 7, the early education fund is established in the state treasury. The department shall separately account for the tax collected under this chapter and deposit it into the early education fund. So B under that says the legislature may use the annual estimated balance in the fund to make appropriations for kindergarten through grade 12. So while it is not a dedicated fund, it is designating the revenue to the early education fund. And so that's very clear. It's more than just intent language. It is specifically going into the early education fund rather than into the general fund. Am I looking at the right version?
You are looking at the right version. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that up. I'd like to ask Emily Nauman about that. We are, as Representative Vance said, looking at page 22 and line 8, line 7 and 8. Where it says the department shall separately account for the tax collected. Is this violating our dedicated versus designated funds, Ms. Nauman?
Again, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services, to the chair. No, we generally classify funds in two types to meet the dedication or to avoid the dedication prohibition. The first is what we call appropriate in funds. That is, once the legislature appropriates money into a fund, it can be further expended without appropriation. The fund in front of you is an appropriate out fund. So the department is directed to separately account for the money accruing from the tax, but it takes an act of the legislature appropriating it out of that fund to spend it. And that's how that direction to spend is optional, the use of the word may. So it's not a dedicated fund issue.
Okay. I think I understand that explanation. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Ms. Nauman. Thanks, Chair Carrick. So I heard what you said, and I'm pretty sure what that means is that we can appropriate out of this fund in a budget bill for anything we want. It doesn't mean you have to write a new bill. It just, if we have a budget bill and we decide that we want to go into this designated fund to get money to pay for defined benefits or an increased BSA or any of the, you know, increased BSA is what this is for, never mind, but defined benefits or healthcare for teachers or whatever we want, we can spend this money on that. We don't have to spend it on education.
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, yes, that's correct. Money in that fund, despite its name, could be used for any public purpose.
Like the Tustamina or Cascade Point or DOT road match. Perfect.
Railroad.
Thank you.
Railroad.
I would say you're getting off topic, but we're not in an amendment right now, so I guess we'll give you that latitude. Okay. I appreciate the discussion a lot. That was a very good question. It sounds like there may be some differences in legal interpretation around this table. However, I really appreciate you asking that question. Representative Vance?
Well, Chair Carrick, I mean, the sponsor of the bill is very clear about her intent. I just wanted to make sure that the public knows and that the committee knows as we're considering these amendments. This is, you know, you were very clear, and I appreciate it. You want this tax to be put towards K-12 education. That's your heart. But just for people listening to understand the mechanics of what we're doing and what this bill says, I think should be on the record. And so everyone kind of understands all of the loopholes, not loopholes. This isn't a loophole. The differences in how we can use funds needs to be very clear. So I just wanted to state that the sponsor's been very clear, and that's why the money being specifically diverted to the early education fund is there. But I felt like in the conversation around the amendments that maybe we had lost track of that. And I admire the bill sponsor directing things where she wants them. But I'm wondering on your amendment that you actually haven't moved yet.
We'll get there.
Once you do it, how does this amendment integrate with that?
Well, let's go ahead and move the amendment, and then we'll can discuss it more. So I'll go ahead and move amendment number 9, also known as A.11, and also object for discussion. And just to offer, we've talked about it quite a bit, but just to reiterate, this amendment bifurcates the high earner income tax, one might call it the income tax portion of this bill, from the head tax portion of this bill, and makes them two separate tax policies. So the amendment also renames the income tax portion, just removing reference to education and calling it an income tax. I'm a very strong supporter of increased investment in education. I really appreciate the bill sponsor's intent to have our designated funds be actually utilized for the purpose we are setting out here. But calling it an income tax just allows us to have a little bit more, even though we have that budget flexibility anyways, legally, no matter what we call it, just have a little bit more both perceived and real budget flexibility with that revenue. We have so many needs as a state. I think everybody around this table is aware that I've offered amendments for public broadcasting every year. I've offered amendments on other issues. Our Alaska State Troopers are constantly looking for recruitment and retention. Our teachers are, but they're just needs all over the state. So I offered this amendment sort of in reflection of a lot of committee discussion that perhaps we don't want to even have a designation on the income tax revenue. This amendment, while it does that, it retains the designation for the education head tax towards the public education fund. And this is meant to make sure we are still achieving the bill sponsor's intent, at least to some degree, where we are putting money directly towards education. Again, recognizing that legally we have the ability to not do that, even with this language, but have some critical revenue for our education system while also having the income tax portion be for UGF. And I'd be happy to take discussion. I guess let's go first to the bill sponsor again, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. I appreciate where this is coming from, and I don't have any strong objection to it. I do want to add a little bit for context. I recognize that whether it's called an education tax or not, it's merely symbolic. And it has no real monetary effect. However, Alaska old timers, and unfortunately that may include me, because I now qualify in that category, but they remember the old school head tax and the collective feeling that they were contributing to schools, even if it wasn't really a dollar for dollar transfer to the schools, they supported it. They supported it because they knew how important education is to a strong community. And I appreciate that. And I think that they will feel ever more slightly comfortable paying for a tax that is labeled education. In general, my understanding is that throughout the world, when you put a label to a tax, there is more will behind it when they understand where their dollars are going. And I appreciate that too, because there needs to be accountability to public dollars. We need to do a much better job of that. But the other thing I wanted to mention just for context and for the body's knowledge, that in the other body today in Senate Finance, am I allowed to say?
I think so, in committee.
There was a resolution passed by the co-chair of Senate Finance that passed very swiftly. And it was to propose an amendment to the Constitution of the state of Alaska relating to a public education fund. So I do believe that there may be a will that is spinning about our state that appreciates that we have a need to have more consistent, reliable, predictable funding for public education. I believe that this bill could link to that. It's a long time coming that we have some sense of predictability that's not tied to the price of oil. It's not ideal because it is going to potentially impact families who are jointly making more than $300,000. But I want to remind folks that this is, if they are making $301,000, their tax for that amount is $40. Is that right? $400. No, I want to make sure I get that right. So they have $150 each for the head tax, and then they're being taxed 4% on top of the $1,000. So I'm sorry, $1,000 gets taxed the 4%. So it's a head tax of $150 each, and then it's 4% on only the dollars above $300,000. So most of your constituents will not be impacted. Most of them then would be paying the $150 or $300 because it's each wage earner. And then $40. So the grand total for that family making $301,000, their grand total taxation is $340. I just want to make sure that we're clear about that and that we understand why it is that I'm trying to keep this limited to a discussion around education tax. That said, if the committee thinks that it's more important to bifurcate in order to be more comfortable, then I fully support this amendment, and I appreciate the thought around getting us to a more comfortable space in passing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. We'll go to Representative McCabe.
Thanks. A question on that with respect to this going to an income tax. You're trying to create a stable funding, as you said, and this is to the maker of the bill, I think. Yet the surtax targets high interest or high earners, right? And the high earners are typically oil and gas executives and mining executives, which are very cyclical industries. So, I mean, how is this materially any less volatile than the rest of our state funding? In other words, oil starts to shrink, BP lays people off, Conoco sends people out of state, the mining industry starts to shrink, and those high earners that are up high enough to trigger this tax, now they're moving out of state. So we are still in a very cyclical situation, in my opinion. So how do you think it's less volatile, as you mentioned?
If I may,
yes, for
thank you, Chair Carrick. So on March 13th, there was another forecast given, and we've had one prior to that too in the spring, and they look out 10 years. And looking out 10 years, if I may, through the chair, we are looking at an upward, what I heard from Mr. Painter directly was that we are going to be seeing at least meeting, I think, what he called CPI, an upward trend all the way throughout, particularly starting at 2031. So from their predictions, and we know that nothing is certain, because the volume of oil and mining has had such a drastic uptick, more than they expected. And looking ahead, actually, it's looking very positive for all the way throughout. And then when 2035 kicks in, the federal royalty oil and gas taxes change to where we will be receiving 30% of that royalty. So the expectation is oil companies are going to want to stay. And it's looking very good in terms of our newer production that's coming into play with Pikka and Willow. That's not, of course, the price is unpredictable. We don't know what that will be. And we didn't expect this giant spike in the last 3 weeks. But because of the higher volume and because of the newer mineral finds at this point, even without modernizing taxes on either industry, the forecast is looking very positive.
Follow up. Thank you, Chair Carrick. So I don't disagree with that. Painter also said that this is among the most volatile period of our oil production ever, or second, maybe highest. He also, we also talked about on the floor about how volatile it is and how afraid we are of, you know, high oil prices don't necessarily mean what we think they mean. And frankly, once the drilling is done and once the oil starts flowing, we'll lose a lot of workers, and it's just sort of the nature of the beast. So I agree with what you're saying. I agree with what Trent said in the 10-year thing, but I don't think that makes the income tax any less volatile, because income tax doesn't depend on the oil flowing. It depends on the people here to support the oil flowing. So if you look at the history of TAPS, and when it first started, TAPS had like 6 pump stations. And when we were all done, it was down to 2, I think. So some of those workers were gone. You know, they're sort of high earners because they're off grid. They're out for 2 weeks a month or 3 weeks a month. So I don't know. I'm a little confused as to how this really changes the volatility, I guess. Maybe a little bit, maybe there's a percentage, but I still see this as being as volatile as our oil revenue. So just a comment more than anything.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. I'll go to Representative Galvin and then Representative Holland. I want to note that we are under amendment number 9 now, and we're straying just a little bit off that subject.
Thank you.
Just a little. And I intend to, after these next two speakers, to take a brief at ease so we can call Ledge Legal and figure out if there's a clean way to conceptually amend this amendment pursuant to our previous discussion. So I'll go first to Representative Galvin.
Give me the old forecast.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Co-Chair Carrick. So what we are hearing from the industry is positive, and what we are hearing from the Department of Revenue looks positive. The price, though, so the production is certainly positive. There hasn't been any question about production long term that I know of. I appreciate hearing if Representative McCabe knows something else. But in looking at prior forecasts, it has a very positive outlook. All the way out through, I think it's 2036 is what we have. 2035. And so I appreciate that. And the long-term forecasts on prices also, they are putting it at between 60 and 70, which apparently is not driving away oil companies. And that, of course, doesn't reconcile with what we've seen over the last. This is an older one, but all the way through so this gets us from 26 to 2035. In 2026, we're looking at 450,000 barrels per day, and that goes up to 650,000 barrels per day by 2035 within 9 years. And it's a straight upward trajectory. So I just want to reiterate that so far that everything we have from industry is the production is up. Of course, we can't know for sure what the price is, but I think they had a pretty conservative number, especially given what we've just recently experienced. And so, you know, who knows where that could go? Absolutely. But it's looking like they're going to keep a lot of workers, and with the natural gas pipeline potentially coming in, that's another 5,000 workers.
So we have strayed pretty significantly from the amendment. So I know that there's a follow-up comment here. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say there's a bit of a difference in opinion about long-term economic outlook with this legislation, and just want to note that. I'd like to take a brief at ease at this time so we can give Ledge Legal a call and have a quick discussion about a potential conceptual amendment, getting back to amending this amendment number 9 before us at ease. House State Affairs is back on the record. Thank you to our committee members for the indulgence to get that sorted. Just for committee members' information, it sounds like the best way to accomplish some of the intent behind Amendment Number 8 is to take action on Amendment 9 and then as a completely separate conceptual amendment, which I now have the correct language for, then take action on the other issue that was being discussed related to technical and vocational education. So if it's all right with folks, we are still right now under discussion on Amendment Number 9, also known as A.11, which at this time will be offered just as is. Is there any further discussion on this amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Vance.
It looks like on page 2, you've added a new section that's an annual education tax on trusts. So could you speak to that, of why you chose to do that? Concern is that you may have individuals who are already paying an individual head tax who also are members of trusts, and would they then be double taxed?
So I believe I may have lost my note on this, Representative Vance. I think this is just conforming to the bifurcation because my staff is telling me that this is existing language from the underlying income tax bill, and it applies to trusts and estates as it is my understanding. So I believe that language is conforming to the fact that we've bifurcated the tax, and so now we have these two structures as opposed to one structure, if that makes sense.
Thank you.
Where's it, Chair?
It's on Representative McCabe, page 2.
Page 2
of the amendment.
Yeah, we're in the bill.
Follow up, Representative Vance.
Page 4 on the bill. So it says each resident or non-resident trust or estate shall pay an annual tax. So are we legally allowed to tax a trust that is outside the state?
That would be probably a better question for Ledge Legal than it would be for me. My understanding is no, but I'll go to Ms. Nauman if she's back.
Sure, I'm here. Again, for the record, this is Emily Nauman, Legislative Legal Services. And before I answer that question, I do want to clarify that the existing head tax on trusts is in the bill. It's at page 3, lines 11 through 12. So this change is conforming, just breaking out the head tax into its own section for trusts. The question through the chair was whether or not the state can tax a non-resident trust, and the short answer is no, but in certain cases trusts will have sufficient nexus that the state could possibly tax some other activity. So it really depends on how sort of attached or how much activity the trust has in the state. But if a trust is only and exclusively a non-resident trust and doesn't have any connection with Alaska, the state cannot tax its income.
Does that help clarify? Okay. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Chair Carrick. So, Ms. Nauman, so I have a trust, a family trust, revocable trust. What if I went out and formed my trust in Maryland? And, you know, it's my wife and I, and we make, you know, say we make over $300,000 or whatever. Are we then not taxed?
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, I'm really hesitant to provide individual tax advice, and I'm sure that you can imagine why. It would depend under the bill on how much attachment or how much nexus that trust had to the state, and I'm just looking to see the trust. How the law defines a trust that is not attached to the state is on page 3, that's in 4322.020C. So a trust is not subject to the tax under this chapter if all of the trustees are non-residents, the corpus of the trust is located outside the state, and there are no income or gains of the trust derived from or connected with a source in the state. So the short answer is, in that scenario, that is not your actual that is not your actual tax situation. Because you're a resident, it's likely that income from that trust would be subject to taxation under this bill.
Thanks. So, thanks, Chair Carrick. So, one more. Let's flip it. So, let's say that I own property in the state, and the trust owns property in the state, and one of my sons is in the trust, or some of my family members are part of the revocable family trust. But the principals of the trust, my wife and I, live in Arizona. Is the trust still taxed? So is the trust still going to be subject to this tax, even though we live in, maybe we work in Arizona for Walmart or something?
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, looking at the same language that we just talked about. So in that case, it looks like under C2, the entire corpus of the trust, including real property, is located outside the state. In the hypothetical that you said, there's property inside the state, that would indicate that that trust should be subject to taxation. C is listing out the factors for the trust to be exempt from tax in the state.
Just another reason not to vote for it.
We're not on the underlying bill just yet, Representative McCabe, but we'll go to Representative Holland, and then I think, if possible, I'd really like to wrap up discussion on this amendment. It's looking, with another amendment and a conceptual amendment before us, like we will need to finish our work on this legislation at our next hearing, but I would like to get through the amendment that's before us today. So we'll go to Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. I just briefly share that I support the amendment and encourage others to. I think there's value in us being honest and transparent about what we're doing. And this asks us to call this income tax. It is an income tax. And I think for Alaskans to get it together, to realize what we need to do to face our future and take responsibility for what we need to do, we need to be responsible to say what we're doing and do what we know we need to do. So I support the amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Holland. I'm not seeing additional discussion at this time on this amendment. I do want to thank the bill sponsor for her earlier comments on this. And I recognize that politically there's probably a lot of additional buy-in that can be gained from putting a tax revenue designated towards something of such great value for so many Alaskans, and I really appreciate that from the underlying bill. This amendment really tries to make both sides of that equation happy. On the one hand, the state really does need just straight up UGF revenue without any sort of real or designation. We've talked a lot about that, strings attached. On the other hand, there is a lot of buy-in to be gained from putting some of that revenue, as much as we can as a legislature, towards something so many people care so much about, and that really is in need of revenue long-term and stably. And I just really appreciate the discussion on this. I'm going to remove my objection to amendment number 9. Is there additional objection?
Object.
There is an objection. I feel like we've talked this into the ground. Do you want to? Okay. Speak to the objection, Rep. McCabe.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Carrick. So I would just say that as a conservative, no tax Republican, I was almost more comfortable knowing it as an education tax when you put the word income tax on it. Sorry. So I maintain my objection.
I think that's worth noting for the bill sponsor going forward, too. Maybe that's the direction the bill needs to go back to in future stages of the process. And I appreciate where you're coming from there. Is there any additional discussion here? Okay, the objection has been maintained. Will the clerk please call the roll on amendment number 9, also known as A.11?
Representative Vance?
No.
Representative St. Clair?
No.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Hemshoot?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
Oh, no.
Representative Holland?
Yes.
Chair Carrick?
Yes.
4 yea, 3 nay.
So with a vote of 4 yeas and 3 nays, amendment number 9, also known as A.11, has been adopted. And just given the late hour of our committee, we are at time for today. So I just wanted to thank again Representative Galvin and her staff for being here. I was going to say this in my next amendment discussion, but I just wanted to point out on the record that there was a report prepared by Rep. Galvin's office by her staff, David Jang. I would highly encourage members to take a look at that.
It's good information.
Very comprehensive and very well written, so worth checking out before our next hearing. Speaking of which, our next hearing is not this weekend. It is next Tuesday. We do have a hearing on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday next week. Members have received that information from my office before, and we will be in contact very shortly with updated schedules for next week. On Tuesday next week, my intention, since the discussion today, is that we will first continue and finish our discussion on House Bill 152 on Tuesday. Then we will take up House Bill 295 from Representative McCabe. And then after that, we will take up House Bill 189 from Representative Mears on the PFD convictions bill. As time allows in our agenda on Tuesday, we have noticed several other bills. We will do what we can to get through as much of the schedule as possible. But we will finish our work on the bills that we were scheduled for today first. And with nothing else before the committee, we are adjourned at 5:17 p.m.